Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Folks, what can I say about today's conversation? It's kind of podcast imitating TV, imitating life, imitating art. That will make sense in a moment, because this is the episode of Sex and the City where Carrie meets Alexander Petrovsky, and you know how I feel about him. We'll get into that. It's also the one where Robert tells Miranda he loves her on a cookie, and Charlotte finds inspiration in Elizabeth Taylor. And Samantha, and I can't believe I'm saying this again, but Samantha has yet another pubic hair story. Season 6, episode 12, and it's called Simply One. And I am joined by not one, but two amazing guests. The first one is a comedian and Emmy-nominated writer who's written on The George Lopez Show and Samantha Who and Mom. Her comedy album, Mouth Punch, is one of the most played on Sirius XM. She also teaches meditation privately and monthly on the podcast Depression Mode. Laura House, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Delight.
We are also joined by the woman who's dubbed the godmother of alternative comedy by LA Times, because she is the creator and host of a little show called Uncabaret. She's also the author of the audiobook So You Need to Decide. She's also got a creativity coaching program called The Infinite Creator. She also happens to play a key role in this episode of Sex and the City. Beth Lapidus is here. Beth, hello.
Hello, Matt. Hey, Laura.
Hello.
So happy to have you both. Beth, let's just table for a moment the story of your iconic role in this episode. We'll come back okay. to it.
All right.
Before that happened, what was your relationship to Sex and the City?
Well, Michael Patrick King was often on the stage at Uncab. So amazing storyteller, as well as, of course, TV writer and director and producer. And so a lot of the kids would come over and hang out. And I mean, besides being a fan, you know, there was a lot of nights the cast would be there, or, and some of the other writers, many of the other writers did, Uncabaret had a spinoff show called Say the Word, which was TV writers writing the story of their lives. And a lot of the writers from the show, Cindy Shupak, Julie and Eliza, I'm having a little brain fart there, would read stories in that show. Meryl Marco, I think, might have written on Sex and the City and was also part of that. Judy Toll, a lot of the writers have, you know, circled through. So it was kind of family, I would say.
Wow, so deep connections before you even
very deep connections.
Yes,
let me say it much more dramatically. Deep ties.
And Greg Behrendt kind of too, right?
Greg Behrendt. Good points. Yes.
I don't mean to get into.
No, bring it in.
I don't mean to remind myself an Uncab super fan, but
remind me. Yes. I mean, Greg Behrendt, who famously was in the writer's room and was the, you know, lone male voice, you know, in the writer's room, there were the stories about, you know, the dates and the thing, you know, the stories. And then at one point, Greg just said, you know, maybe he's just not that into you. And then Liz Tichullo, famously, who's also has read great stories at Uncab, you know, was like, huh. And they wrote the book, He's Just Not That Into You, a book which is so good, even the title tells you what it means. And and so, yeah, Greg, and I'm sure others that I'm forgetting.
Laura, well, speaking of TV writers, Laura House, I believe Sex and the City played an important role in your writing career. Is that correct?
Yeah. It was my first spec script was a Sex and the City spec. Again, like, I hate to sound like settle down grandma's talking, but that was, you know, a spec script, a show that's on TV and you write a fake, your own episode of it. People don't even do that anymore. But I, I don't remember all the stories, but I remember the theme was about cheating. And so it's such a fun show to spec because it has such a great, this just the setup is so great. So like somebody was cheating at something like Scrabble and then somebody was being cheated on. And then somebody was like cheating at a, you know, high a variation of stakes of cheating or different, you know, where somebody was taking a shortcut, I think, that kind of cheating. So it's, I don't know. I just, yeah, I love it.
I'd love to read that that spec script.
I'd love to have it. I didn't even think I had a computer. I don't even know. I don't even know what electronically it would be. I know when I handed it to my agent, it was a printed draft, like it's 1806.
Wow.
Yep.
And I, Laura, I know you have not had a chance to catch the new show. And just like that, Beth, no wrong answers here, but have you been watching?
I've had a chance, of course. Yes. yes. Michael's a close friend. You got to watch the shows that the friends
You
got to. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's great to see the people. I mean, it's like seeing friends that you were so close to. What are they up to?
Yeah, exactly.
What's happening? What's going on with them?
I'm just happy to be in their presence. I'll take them in any shape and form. Okay, so let's get into the episode. We open with Carrie and Charlotte in an art gallery, and they're there to see a performance artist who is not talking or eating. She's on this kind of like stark white ledge, and the only way up or down is a ladder made of butcher knives. And that performance artist is played by our own Beth Lapidus. So, Beth, I remember the first time I met you in LA just being so, I could not square that I was face to face with.
Oh my gosh. Well, with this that's person. So sweet. Well, let me say this, launch into
Please.
Some of the stuff? Yeah. Well, first of all, that they licensed that performance from an actual performance artist named Marina Abramowitz. And she is a, you know, full on, there's like an Abramowitz Institute. I just saw on Instagram, she's now making, you know, youth face products and she's a whole thing. I mean, And in her autobiography, she refers to this, you know, show. And I think, you know, she has her opinions. But I remember, so this was a real piece. She really was sitting, and she was famously at the Museum of Modern Art doing face-to-face stuff with an audience. And so this piece where she was basically living on this platform in this gallery. And, you know, that ladder is like really a stunning visual, the knife ladder. And so she did this thing and she had a statement and they licensed the whole thing from her. So they sent me the thing and Michael asked me, he said, you know, I want you to do it, but David Frankel was directing the episode and he needs to see you. And so like, Michael's like, put yourself on tape. And, you know, John Melfi, who I also love, I think was, you know, wanted me to do it but put yourself on tape. And, but Michael's like, but like, no zhuzh. I mean, and there's no lines. I mean, there's literally, I mean, if you've seen the episode, I'm not telling you anything, you know, you don't know, but there's no lines. So it's me sitting on a platform and sending a tape and no zhuzh. It's like, all right, what, you know, and I worked on that freaking self tape. I mean, for so long until I just made like sitting there doing, you know, nothing with no zhuzh castable. I was like, all right, this is a day long project. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't and I overworked, but anyway, that's what I did. And so that's Marina. And previously to that, I had had, I was having lunch with Michael one day and this was before the announcement. And he told me Bershnikov had, you know, was going to be the person. And And I was like, oh my God, I had a dream about Baryshnikov. This is the most incredible dream of my life. I'm in a parking garage and Baryshnikov is there and we're dancing. And I mean, and you know, a parking garage is like so rapey. And instead of like getting raped, I'm like dancing with Baryshnikov. It's the most incredible dream of my life. And so it was like great. And then I get, and then I, that, you know, and then months later I get cast and I'm in New York. And so Michael is introducing me to Baryshnikov and he was like, and it's so nice. It's like, I think it was even like his first day on the set. And so there's like a billion women and then like Baryshnikov. And and so Michael introduces me and he says, tell him the dream. I was like, oh God, no. And he says, tell him the dream. I was like, oh, Michael, I mean, I know. And you know, on the third time, it's like, okay, well, he's in charge. It's his show. So I start telling him the dream. And as I'm telling him the dream, and for me, I mean, it was like romance, but it was really, it didn't have that, in the dream itself, it was really kind of an art dream. It was really like the dancing was so incredible. It wasn't like a romantic pairing. It was like the joy and the romance of like being with this person who was like the best in the world at this. Mm-hmm. And, but how, you can't say that, like I'm fumbling and I'm like, and then I'm dancing with you in a garage. And I just kind of only imagine like, and he starts backing away. Like as I'm telling him, he's like tiptoeing away and literally trips. And I'm like, I have just made the greatest dancer in the world trip over his own 2 feet. And anyway, wow. Ha ha ha, sort of funny. And then he was super sweet during the actual taping. And I mean, you know, when they were doing my shots, he was that, you know, and I'm supposed to be looking at, you know, he actually stayed and did that. That's very generous. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Actors don't always do that. And he was giving, you know, he was giving it. And so that was amazing. And you know, we ate lunches and, you know, it was super friendly. And then at the end, when I was wrapped, I was saying, you know, thanks so much. And, you know, hey, I'm so sorry about, you know, the dream. And then he starts, that happens all over again. I just did the
whole thing. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
That was one thing about Baryshnikov. And I mean, he was amazing to work with. And yeah, it was a dream come true.
Literally.
In so many ways.
You manifested this, and I can't imagine anyone else doing it.
That so much. I mean, there was so much about. Should I just blather on about it? I mean, there was so much more. So a few things. One was, first of all, when you get your wardrobe, I mean, the place where they take, you know, the wardrobe warehouse of Sex and the City. It, epic. That's
and
exactly.
What you wore was cool. It was a cool suit.
It was just like that white. I mean, you know, white top, black. There was two. One was white, one was black. Just super simple. Well, when they first wardrobed me, they gave me an olive green one and sort of a rusty orange one. And Michael came in and he was like, what's this? They don't know colors. Black and white. It was like the most simple. I mean, people sometimes were like, did you get to keep your costume? I'm like, what costume? It was like, Brooks. It was nothing. And in fact, the guy, the wardrobe gave me like beautiful underwear. And Michael was like, no beautiful underwear. This is like, this isn't what this is. This is like, you know, Marina Abramowitz, like black and white, like super simple. So that was sort of funny. But the actual, it is like a slice of heaven because it's like, rafters, you know, 1,000 feet up with like every single thing that's ever been worn. And you just feel like you just want to breathe it in and sort of, yeah, it was, that's an incredible place on earth. And I know a lot of that's, you know, I know a lot of it was donated and sold and auctioned off and probably, I don't know, probably doesn't exist anymore. But anyway, that was super sweet. Another thing is at one point, Michael was, you know, we were walking around and he was introducing me to everyone and he introduced me to the script supervisor. And as we've already discussed here today, I had no lines. And I said, well, I guess we won't be working very closely together. Michael looked at me like, Sally Field won an Emmy for, you know, zero lines. Why are you, you know, don't say that, anything like that. And it's true. I mean, I have to say, I've become very aware of parts where there's a lot, there's not a lot of talking, and it's such a joy for one thing. I mean, you both, I'm sure, can give me a hallelujah on not having to
the ideal role
in the learn no lines.
I mean, oh God, yes.
You have to talk at a certain time. It's weird to be like, I love acting, but I hate the part where you have to say some specific thing at a certain time.
And all that memorization. And so that part was great. And also one thing that was hilarious was I had one acting teacher who used to tell me I was using my eyebrows too much expression with the eyebrows. Like, you know, just, you know, put it in the words, stop using your eyebrows. And there's this one moment in it, you know, where I have this little eyebrow thing, right? And so many people have said to me, oh, that eyebrow thing. And I have to laugh all the time because, you know, the acting teacher was like, no eyebrows. And then that becomes the thing. It just, to me, is such a reminder of, like, there is no rule. Like, there's no one thing that you can be taught and you can be told and you can follow every rule. And then the thing that happens for you is the thing that goes against that thing, even though, like, no eyebrows isn't a big rule in, you know, in life, but it's not a big acting thing. But for me, it was just a little constant reminder. So that's kind of funny. And I wrote a piece about it called To See and Be Seen. And it was, the New York Times was going to publish it on the back, you know, that in the magazine, the back page story. Mm-hmm. And we had edited it and the whole thing. And the night before it was supposed to run, I got an email that said, we just can't. Remember how the end of Sex and the City, literally every single thing was Sex and the City. Like every time you opened a paper was another Sex and the City thing. They were like, yeah, we can't this. We reached the tipping point. Like, we just can't.
Oh, wow.
Yours is the where we cut. Yours is the line. You are the tipping point. This is now too much. This is the end.
You were next on the roller coaster. And then
yes, over.
We talked recently about that episode where Carrie doesn't have enough money to buy her apartment and Charlotte eventually gives her engagement ring to help her get the money. That one always strikes a nerve because it's such a relatable topic, because sometimes that paycheck just doesn't seem to come quick enough. But look, life doesn't happen biweekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app, you verify your paycheck, then you access up to $100 a day as you work, leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I know I've got my husband's birthday coming up. I want to give him a nice gift. He's a man who likes the nicer things in life. So that's certainly how I would use the extra money I'd get from Earnin. Download Earnin today. It's EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Just Like Matt under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. That's Just Like Matt under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of therapy. It's a big part of my life. Therapy is where I process a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. You know, stress about aging or career or navigating a breakup, whether it be romantic or an issue with friends. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Another reason I love therapy is that it helps me to recharge my social battery, especially as we're ramping up for summer. We're all going to be seeing a lot more friends and family. Some of us have, you know, some introverted tendencies. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likematt.
And I mean, one other thing, which is so incredible about doing this part for me is, you know, I started my career as a performance artist. I started my career in New York, also Laura, in 1800. And, you know, I was a solo performance artist, you know, I toured America. I've toured internationally with solo shows and NEA grants and the whole thing. And at a certain point, I knew I wanted to be fun. And I was funny for a performance artist, you know, But I knew I wanted to be funnier. I knew comedy. I had made a decision that, like, I was like, either life is, basically life is, you know, you go along and you finally get it and you die. And then I was like, that's either hilarious or tragic. And yeah, I think you get to pick. And I'm going to decide it's hilarious. And I was like, well, if it's hilarious, then I should be funnier. I mean, it's a very, like, you know, roundabout way of saying I would decide to be funnier. And so I was going to start working in comedy clubs. And I kind of kept, you know, it was a transition. And in some ways, I still consider myself a performance artist. But I left the life of performance art. And so to be, it was so amazing to be brought back. And I'm so grateful for this. I mean, forever grateful for this part. And, you know, to be brought back and to play, you know, probably one of the three most famous performance artists, as an actress, to come back from LA to New York and play a performance artist. It was really such, I really love to see my life in cycles and spirals and circles. And, you know, it was such a full circle moment. And it was a really amazing for me in that way. That was my own, that's my own personal behind the scenes, what it meant to me, little Mark, but.
It's amazing to go behind the curtain with you. I mean, it is a great performance. I mean, as much as we've like joked about the, you know, lack of dialogue, you're telling a story. And do you remember how method you, I mean, obviously you were eating and sleeping unlike the character, but beyond that, do you remember taking it really seriously as an actor in the moment?
Yeah. Super seriously. I really did. She had a big, you know, artist statement that went with the piece that was, I'm not going to be able to quote it to you, but it was about connection with the audience and, you know, the viewer and the artist and the viewer and what happens when you look at each other. And I think actually Sarah Jessica reads some of that. I think somebody reads some of that in the script, but for sure I read it. And I did it. I mean, they had a whole audience in there and I did it with them and it was super intense. It was a super intense experience. I don't know about for the audience. I mean, not for the audience, but you know, I don't know about the performance art audience, the people in the room. I don't know what their experience was, but my experience as the artist who was, you know, doing it, I was doing the piece and it was very effective in terms of like, you know, the exchange of energy and just looking at each other. It was really a piece about the artist and the audience looking at each other directly and what happens. And as a metaphor for all of our, you know, us looking at Sex and the City and in a way, you know, something like this podcast is an exchange of our experience of looking and how this show changes us and, you know, deep connections. So I definitely did do the piece as I was doing it. And it definitely did make, you know, I did have feelings. I don't know. I can't tell you what the audience felt, but I did. Yeah.
Well, this leads us to, oh, go ahead, Laura.
I was going to say, I felt like that really came through and I felt like, cause it didn't, like, there's a version of doing that where you're just like, oh, I'm a human piece of meat. And that's just the bit. And it's really about Baryshnikov and Carrier on a date. And, but it really came, it was very grounded. You felt like New York City. Like that was my take as I hit it. And I want you to, so my fiance is he's a jazz trumpet player and he decided that at 10 years old. So our cultural, he had never seen Sex and the City is why I mentioned that. So, cause our cultural references are the same up until like 1980. And then he's like, oh, I've never heard of, I just paid attention to dead guys after that, jazz guy.
Yeah.
Can you hear my dog? Sorry, she just...
Your dog got very excited about this story, yeah.
Somebody's at the door.
Yeah, her input is welcome. Don't worry about it.
Okay. So, but he, as soon as you came on screen, he goes, oh, Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, yes.
You get that a lot?
Oh my God. HBO.
I was like, yeah, Jennifer, okay.
HBO has gotten, I mean, even when it happened, they got like, all this mail about like, how did you get Jennifer Aniston to
Oh my God.
I mean, he's not alone. And if you That's Google it, it's like Jennifer Aniston, you know, HBO, you know, Sex and the City, and this episode comes up and it's a thing. And I continue to look at myself and I just think, all right, I don't know. I don't see if I don't mind.
I see it.
I see it.
I laughed and wanted to pass that along, but I was like, no, I absolutely, I see it.
That's nice.
That is the highest praise.
Yeah, it is.
And it's very true. So, yeah, I mean, this is, of course, where we meet Petrovsky. And obviously, Baryshnikov is a legend and his performance is wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, Laura, I guess my question is, how much do you hate Petrovsky? He, for me, is the worst person that Carrie ever dated. And that includes Berger. You know, she dated some real duds.
Berger.
He's just the worst. You know, the fact that right from the jump, he is just so humorless. And then, of course, becomes a true asshole later on when they go to Paris. But what is your feeling around Petrovsky?
Listen, this is hard for me to talk about because I am a little codependent and I just want to agree. So, but the truth is, and I also don't want to say anything gross, but I'm going to go against my nature in several ways right now. He was so hot when he came on stage, when he came on screen, I like got my period again. Not really, that's disgusting. But I was like, suddenly 13, I was like, any mention of Baryshnikov, I'm like, you have no right to ask. I'm just like, it's white knights. I'm like hitting puberty. Like the character I had not considered until you actually brought it up of like, what do I think of that? Because I was just panting over like Baryshnikov, and Beth is in a room with Baryshnikov, and I'm like, I'm a degree away from Baryshnikov. That was my, I started thinking of Jessica Tandy. I looked up who he's married to now. Listen, I really went, as a character, I mean, I don't know, he's just one of those guys who's like, he's the foxy, sexy, older guy artist that I guess is a certain type. Like, you know, I rewatched this and several other episodes, so I don't really remember how much of it, but it was one of those, like, they are doing the thing of, because they want them attracted to each other, they're laughing at each other's things that aren't really funny at all. They're just hormonally inclined to be like, you brought light and dark chocolate. You're amazing. Like, just, they don't really do anything. Yeah. But he was, I don't know, I guess I liked it. He was sexy, mysterious artist. Like, he's in there welding. I mean, come on. I jumped ahead to the next episode, but it's like,
you know,
it
is such an interesting litmus test to find out which of the men in the show do it for different, I mean, people have very different reactions.
I liked Berger too. I think I did. I didn't like Big. I did at first. So maybe I'm upside down on her boyfriends, but I just like, I love Steve.
First.
Well, Steve wasn't her boyfriend.
No, I know. I'm
but
just
talking about the boyfriend.
I'm like, did I miss greats. Something? Wait,
no,
did
no, just
share
the boys
boyfriend?
Of the thing. Oh. I'm just like, no, I love Evan Handler. I forget his, but like, I liked and did. So I don't know. I might be reverse on like how we feel about Carrie's boyfriends. I don't know. Because to me, Big was just like the worst. So I guess I kind of like the hot artist.
Was so happy when he died. Spoiler alert, Laura. Sorry.
That I knew.
Just like that.
I did know that. No, he was. Yeah. And he's that guy you're never going to let go of, right? Like, he has to die. Like, he's the guy, you're never going to leave him. He has to. And like that Peloton did for her what she could not do for herself.
That's right. And good riddance. But Beth, did you have any emotional attachments to the men of Sex and the City?
I think I loved them all. I think I'm so was like just her when she loved them, I loved them. And, you know, when I was never rooting for one to, I think, so. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, the narcissistic artist is the most appealing and the worst for you. Mm-hmm. And I say that, you know, probably identifying also with him. So, I mean, I think, it was probably interesting to me to see what he brought, you know, which things each boyfriend brought out in her. To me, it was always about her or all of them more than, oh, I have to tell you something. One thing that I learned while I did this. So, you know, when they're at the coffee shop, maybe other people have already told you this. Maybe it's widely known. I don't know. I didn't know it. When they're sitting in the coffee shop and they're looking out the window, what you can't really see, but is there on the set, in the set, when you're sitting in the coffee shop and you look out the window, the store across the street is a bridal store that has four wedding gowns in the window.
Wow.
Did you just get shivers? Isn't that insane?
Really?
I did not know this.
Wow.
One for each of our gals.
So was that like, you know that from being on set, or like, did Michael tell you like there's little, hey, they're all going to get married?
I mean, you could see it.
Wow.
I mean, he pointed it out and then I was like, oh. There, you know, that's crazy.
Were there more of those?
I mean, it wasn't like a whole window
out, like
a little, I don't know, but, and it wasn't, can't remember. I don't think it was a real bridal shop. I mean, it was a, mm-hmm. you
know, yeah, they dressed this. It was not an actual bridal shop that just happened to have four dresses.
No, it was, it was a set, but I don't think it was a window. I think it was a painting of window. Yeah. Either way though.
Wow.
That's interesting.
And also, by the way, I do also want to say this. Anything I say could be not true. I'm not very good with facts.
I'm not here for facts by any means. Yeah, I'm not interested in research.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's true. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering that right. But
I'm choosing to believe it as true.
So in some ways, I guess about the guys, I was just always so, I don't remember ever being, you know, happy or sad that she was, you know, that any of them were perfect or imperfect. I mean, Big, I think, had always that thing of like the guy that doesn't exist. I mean, there isn't somebody like that. That doesn't, is the, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That isn't a person.
Yeah, it's not a person. I mean,
it isn't a person, especially for, you know, coming from the point of view of like a female artist, you know, the men that, you know, Laura's with a, you know, musician, I'm with a musician, the men, you know, the men who like women who are artists are artists in general. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, the other guys in my experience, and looking at, you know, the women that I've known in life, you'll fix that in post. you know, and not to generalize, guys, if you're listening, but, you know, there is a thing about creative women that creative men like best. You know, it's just a good fit in my experience.
Such a good point. Yeah.
And so for me, I always wondered about the big thing about, you know, her. And I think they do this in the show, the amount that she has to compromise her kind of career stuff. And, you know, it was tricky because the show was really about the friendship as much. It's more than it was about, you know, her creativity. But as a creative person, I'm sure you guys too, you know, you look at her creative life, and without even getting into, well, it's not realistic, she couldn't make that much money to live in that place. No, I'm not even talking about that. It's a fairy tale. But just the idea of having a creative life and how it plays out, and, you know, some of the repercussions of being a writer and thinking about your life and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'm running up against I'm petering out here. I don't have any further. And, you know, I don't want to make any generalizations, but I just have. So
that's what we're here to do. Generalizations and no facts, please.
And part of the, like, I guess part of what, I guess almost even from when you asked the question, I guess it almost never occurred to me to not like any of the guys, because it just seemed like, not seemed like, I mean, that was the wish fulfillment of like the buffet of sex one can have in somewhere like New York City. Like they were, I'm from Texas, but I was in LA and they were just slightly older than me. And like, that's what I was doing, you know, yeah. This pre AA for me. So this was, you know, like I was not any of these people, but in my mind, I kind of what, you know, like I was sampling and that was like a goal of mine. Like I wanted to sample a spectrum of humanity, you know, in that way. And
yeah.
It is just like, yeah, like take me on a story with the sexy art, like, you know, like I don't think it's gonna go anywhere. Oh, and I, you know, and I definitely related to her. I was totally like, I go to bed with you, I'm a Samantha, I wake up a Charlotte, like which Carrie did with him, of like, oh, mm-hmm. He's just my lover. Oh, now I love him.
No, and I'm
like
attached.
That was always my 1-2 trap.
Oh yeah, that is a tough combo.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I think that a lot of my sluttier years were very informed by the show, in that like I would go out with guys that I just knew they would make a great story.
Yeah.
That I would tell my friends. Yeah, I'd tell my friends about them. And I'd write about them. And, yeah. Well, let's talk about the title and theme of the episode. It's just called One. And Carrie's, you know, question of the episode in her column is some version of like, when will waiting for the one be done? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that at this stage of our lives, none of us is spending too much time thinking about have I found the one? Is my person the one? Where, what is, like,
well, after you finish with the one and you're on your two, you know, the two and the four, you know, it's like,
you got to stop counting at a certain point. Yeah. So what I want to know about a moment in your life when that was the quest, when you believed in the one, when you were searching for the one, was there such a time for either of you?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, in New York, you know, these days of the performance art days and the early comedy days and living in Little Italy, you know, Williamsburg and Little Italy and running around and also pre-sobriety and, you know, just running around. I think, though, it wasn't that I was looking for the one. I was looking for the life, and I just did have the sense that there was somebody who would make the life work, you know, that there was like a, it wasn't that it the one always implies to me that this person is going to give meaning, give you the meaning. And I definitely knew that I wanted to I knew what I wanted, and I felt like there was somebody who could make it easier, or not easier, but more whole, or, you know, it was like it, where it could be like I could focus on work because this person was in place. That's what really, I honestly, I sounds kind of crazy now, but
not at all.
I mean, as a driven person, you sort of want the, and I, you know, and running around and being out until 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning and going to clubs was not the worst thing in the world for a young performer, you know, a young artist. You meet a lot of people, but, you know, there comes a time, and also, you know, there were other, anyway, those factors. And I did actually meet somebody who, you know, for many years I was a creative partner with. So for me, I was always looking for that, the creative partnership. And I did kind of think it would last my whole life, and then it didn't. So there you go.
Folks, sunnier days are a-comin'. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now.
Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
That's actually and just like that. Because as we've learned from the show, that some of the most interesting things can happen after that page turns.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Laura, what about for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love what you said. And I love that you said it out loud. Like maybe it's out there, but it's not out there a lot because I did the same thing and I have not known how to really express it, but I old fashioned wise wanted a wife, you know, is I panic married when I was 30. My mom was very sick and I felt fat and old and it was over for me. And some guy with a goatee proposed and I was like, yeah, okay. and it was not awesome, but I just thought, well, he'll give me stability. Like I'm crazy and I'm all over the place. And I longed for that stability so I can just focus on my work and career. And, you know, instead it was an anchor and I couldn't. And also for me, I was such an internal mess and sort of an asshole that I was still looking for the one. Like I was married, but I would still be like, well, maybe I'll meet him here. Fully married.
Did you ever think you were married and he would become the one by being married to you?
It wasn't like he was bad. It was just there wasn't much there. To be honest, I just was sad and, it just not, I wasn't, such a prize, but it just wasn't, there wasn't a there, but I did want that. And then I had a thing that I thought was my Harry Met Sally. He's the one, this 7-year thing that in retrospect, I was just hanging on to what I thought that relationship was and that it actually wasn't very good. And can I try to tell you in a quick story? Because I do think the person I'm with is the one, and I do think of it in those terms. And I knew from our first date. And can I try to tell you that story quickly?
Please.
We're on our first date. We met online dating, and then we're messaging, and I think I really like him, and I'm asking all these questions that you just don't ask before you meet. Like, did you ever cheat on your wife? And, you're a musician, but I had been cheated on, and I was like, let's just out with it. Time's a wasting. And I'm in my late 40s at this point. And we decide to meet, and we're at a restaurant, and we like the looks of each other. We're like, great, headed to the table. A waiter gets in front of me with a tray and then gets kind of distracted. And that tray starts to tip toward, I'm dressed up and it starts to tip. And I'm like, well, it's not going to fall. He's a professional. Oh, and this tray hits my chest, crashes to the, everyone turns and looks, and this guy doesn't know what to do. He's like 10 feet in front of me, like, oh no. And that luckily it was empty plates. And so, but I'm just like, oh, what do I do? And I was like, do you need a rain check? Like you were just assaulted by plates. And what do you? And I was like, I think I'm okay. And I sit down, and this is what Brian did. And I've been with him every moment since this is how I knew. Brian looked at me very sweetly across the table. And he said, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? It was weird adrenaline. I'm embarrassed, but yeah, I'm okay. And just as sweetly, maintaining eye contact, he looks at me across the table and he says, can I laugh now? And I was like, that's my dude. Like, that is so that you just
that's such that's
awesome. That's a great
consent
story.
Is everything, and I was especially like, in that moment, yeah,
first sweet and thoughtful and then bit of a smart ass. I was like, that's my guy.
That's great.
That
story.
Is the one. That is
yeah. that was the one, and not the way that Lionel Richie outlined it.
Turns out.
I never knew to look for that. Yeah, it was never it's not in a love song.
One of the better boyfriends, I think, that
we have met in our travels is Robert. And he ends up kind of getting the short end of the stick with Miranda. You know, this is Blair Underwood character.
Oh,
Rice, yes. I love you on the cookie, and sends Miranda into this panic spiral. Any thoughts on the Robert and Miranda story?
Also, he's so delicious. Like, I was, again, I rewatched and was like, oh my God, Blair Underwood, are you kidding me?
So hot.
He's so hot and so into her, but he was also so mean. I know they end up breaking up in a weird way, but he became like, he said some weird, it's weird for him to be like, you like chocolate, don't there was some weirdness, but he was like, I don't know. That's why those stories, I feel like that's why that show meant so much. Like, I feel like we were told as women and people, you're this kind of person or you're that kind of person. And then Sex and the City was like, well, it's actually a little complicated, because he was the guy that you want to be with, and he's your dream guy, and he's, and then she just had her feelings for Steve, and then she just couldn't help it. And, you know, I can't make myself love someone I can't love. And, you know, like, I just thought that was, I don't know. I love that, but yeah, I love that guy. I mean, that's the guy you want to be sex with, that guy in your building. Like, he's just right there in your building. Yeah. Yes.
It is relatable to panic after he tells, because I'd be like, you love me? What's happening now? This cannot be real. Not that Miranda isn't beautiful and deserving, but.
But you know, I think it's also, we know so much more about relationships and love now than we did. I don't know. It's just so crazy, the amount of like mental health and like, I mean, I feel like TikTok and Instagram are just this like constant, this may be my feed, but you know, even I just feel like you can't avoid it. There's just so much like information about like healthy relationships and mental health and like, oh, love bombing. Like, did any of us ever hear of love bombing then? It's like, you know, we wouldn't, you don't pick it up, you know? So I think there was a lot of like what's good on paper and what's real. I mean, I like that about the show. It's like the good on paper versus, you know, knowing what you're really feeling. And I think a lot of it was learning emotional intelligence, like as they grew up, you know, being less naive about you and your own needs and what you're feeling. And that's, this story is part of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also interesting. I mean, you're right, Laura. Robert really does. It sours a bit in the end. You know, he definitely gets, he turns on Miranda kind of an ugly way in probably the next episode. But he's someone I would love to see come back in and just like that, because this is another spoiler for you, Laura, I apologize, but Miranda is now fully gay.
No, and I know some of the things. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And
I'm
so
I'm just not caught up, but I'm not totally uncaught up, but yeah.
But how great for him to come back and for her to be like, you know what? It wasn't that you weren't the one or Steve was the one. It was that none of you were, turns out.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think also, you know, at the time, people change, you know, bisexuality is a thing, polyamory, you know, wasn't that she wasn't into it then. It's just now is different.
Well, yeah.
And just like that, I mean, I love that that was the title, you know, that I love that they found that title that, you know, refers to change and that people are changing, because in some ways what was so great about Sex and the City and, you know, as a show was, you know, unlike, you know, that whole period of TV, because, you know, we had the sitcom where people were the same and you had to be the same and it was the same thing. And then you get into an area of scripted shows where it's like, oh, wait, maybe people could change. I mean, maybe it's possible. And so which parts of people can change? I mean, which, you know, is somebody going to, you know, which parts can change and which parts are essentially you? And I think, you know, for me, at the, you know, difference between when I'm, you know, was young and in New York and now looking for a partner now, I, you know, what I love about my relationship now is, you know, it is about change. It's not, I don't love you just the way you are. And I don't want to be loved just the way I am. I want a partner in change. And I want somebody who for the rest of their life is involved in growth and change. And I think the show really it's a really interesting the way Michael has, you know, been able to keep characters consistent enough to, you know, make the audience happy and also, you know, let people change. And so I don't think that Miranda's, you know, being, you know, gay says, oh, this other part wasn't true. It just says, oh, well, this is also true. People are bigger and more complicated than maybe we were giving them the chance to be.
Yeah. Well said.
Did anybody have a reaction to, I had a strong reaction when she told Steve she loved him in the laundry room with the cake, but I had a negative reaction. Was that just me?
Oh, do tell.
I feel like I love Steve more than Miranda did. I felt so protective of Steve.
Yeah.
And also he had the cutest girlfriend and she really loved him. And when Miranda blurts, you know, I love you, you're the one, I've always loved you. Like I knew I was supposed to feel like, oh good, they're getting back together. But I was like, my chest hurt, and I've seen it. I was rewatching it, but I was like, oh, that's right. And my chest hurt for Steve. Cause I was like, it can never work between you. It didn't work between, she's this high powered and you just like to play basketball in the park and it's really not going to change. And it doesn't matter how much you like, I really felt like when your friend is like, I'm getting back with Mark, and you're just like, oh, it's going to be a lot of painful phone calls with you for the next 20 months.
Years.
Like, I hurt. It's like, and it's when it's also even more complicated because the way the show is set up as a viewer, my friend is Miranda, right? But I know Miranda well enough to know Steve is about to get his ass kicked.
Right.
I was like, team Steve in that one, because I'm just like, oh,
fair.
I think they did a great job in making people love Steve and Miranda both, and letting and understanding that, like, you know, it's also just like there isn't a right path and mistakes are part of life. And I think that it had that relationship really is about that.
Mm.
You know, I mentioned this earlier, but Samantha, meanwhile, I know we have to wrap up, but just quickly, Samantha's storyline. And this is like the third week in a row on this podcast that we have done a pube storyline. And but this one of, you know, is the, you know, she finds the gray pube, she dyes it, it turns orange, she has to shave it. But this one actually does resonate because it is about her vanity and her fear of aging, which very much resonates with me at this stage of life. I don't know if I'm alone there.
What? Aging? I'm sorry. I have to go. I don't know. You know, I didn't rewatch the episode right before this. So I do know, though, that, you know, the intersection of beauty and aging and how, you know, details. That's that. I mean, that's one of the great things about the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was an editor choice. So in it, just recap, she dyes her pubes and then they come out like orange red. Like it's not good. But there is a clown at the children's party and there is a match cut from the either from like from her weird pubes to the clown's wig or the other direction.
Oh, right.
Just a chef's kiss transition.
I was slow clap chef's kiss in my living room, like going, well, you did it, didn't you?
Good. Oh, for my God.
You really did.
You really did.
That was so great. Oh, my God.
Well, I guess we'll end on orange pubes, on clown pubes.
Is there any better place to end?
I don't think so.
Beth looks like Jennifer Aniston.
That's right. That actually should be the
Jennifer
title of this episode.
Is like, I don't remember doing Sex in the City, but I guess I did.
And she's like, and by the way, I looked great.
Yeah.
I did a great performance.
Yeah.
I get to keep that suit. Where is it?
Laura House, Beth Lapidus, thank you both so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Matt. Great to see you. Great to see you, Laura, too. Thanks for having me.
You too, yeah.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram @AndJustLikeMattPod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.